This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
A silent storm begins to brew in an ancient land of darkness. With tumultuous force from the crust of the earth, two worlds come together as one, from the past and the present, celebrating culture and spirit, paving the pathway to our future. It's time for dreaming. Urban dreaming. Finding your voice. Finding your spirit. Joy 94.9. Warren Jacker, Joy 94.9 would like to acknowledge and pay respect to the sovereign peoples of the past, present and future generations of the Kulin Nations on whose unceded land we work, live and broadcast from. We would also like to acknowledge all our brother boys and sister girls of the LGBTI communities.
Yes, good evening. It is Urban Dreaming. This is Maddie here and I'm in the studio with Gal. Hi, Gal.
Hello, back again.
And also got Grace, who's going to be panelling for us tonight. Hi, Grace.
Hi, guys.
It's a massive, massive show tonight. We've got an action-packed show. We've got Mark Cole-Smith in, Ebony Maguire, Claire Bowen. You'll notice that we're missing a pretty poignant voice here on the show. Sarumi is away. He's currently in tech for a show called Big Heart that you guys should all go and see. It opens this weekend, so you'll get the deets on our Facebook page. But it is a massive show. And talking about massive shows, Worldwide Wave always do an incredible show before us. So thank you guys for that. Matt, Will and the team, I always learn so much about it. So that was Worldwide Wave. And talking about things that are massive, we've got Tash Sultana now. We're going to play you Jungle.
Hi, this is Alfie Akuri. You're listening to Urban Dreaming on Joy.
Yes, you are on Urban Dreaming. This is Maddie, and we've got Gal in, and you just listened to the song Jungle by Tash Sultana, an incredible, incredible Indigenous artist of her own right. And in the studio with us tonight, we have another incredible artist. We've got Mark Cole Smith in. He's an Indigenous actor, music producer, all sorts of things. He's hailing from Broome. Mark has worked across several performing arts genres, first and foremost as an actor, but also as a writer, producer and sound designer. What blows my mind is he was the 2017 Helpman Award winner for Best Male Actor in a Play for his work on Lea Purcell's acclaimed adaptation of The Drover's Wife. I can't wait to hear more about that. A Best Supporting Actor nomination and Best Supporting Actor win at the Film Critics Circle of Australian Awards feature film Last Cab to Darwin, opposite Jackie Weaver and Michael Caton. Many, many other shows. US series of Hunters for this sci-fi network. Old School opposite Brian Brown and Sam Neill. The Gods of Wheat Street. A lead guest in the hit American comedy Modern Family. Hard Rock Medical and a co-production between SBS TV and Canada's TV Ontario. The features Around the Block and Beneath Hill 60. Miss Fisher's Murder Mysteries. Blue Heelers. Dirt Game. The Circuit. And Please Like Me. Mark will soon be seen in a reimagining of Picnic at Hanging Rock on Foxtel. Mark, that's a ridiculous amount of things.
Yeah, that's a huge resume.
Hey, beautiful people. Thank you so much for having me in the studio tonight.
How are you, brother?
Yeah, I'm really good, man. Really glad to be here.
Yeah, good, good. We've got so many questions to ask you. Gal, what do you got?
Well, just in terms of what the Helpman Awards is, and for those who don't really know, like myself, can you explain what is it and what does it mean for you and, I guess, for the broader Indigenous community as well? What is it really?
So I feel like the Helpman's Awards are pretty much Australia's, like, industry standard in recognition for work in theatre, live music and musical theatre and festivals. They've even got acknowledgements for festivals. So it's a huge sort of showcase and awards evening where they sort of look back over the past 12 months of work that's taken place in the country and do some shout-outs to all the hard industry professionals at work trying to, you know, scrape it together. For me, I sort of keep repeating the joke that I'll take all the Helpmans I can get. I felt very blessed to have been pulled in at the 11th hour to work on The Drover's Wife, Lea Purcell's amazing new work and an adaptation of the Henry Lawson short story, which we did through Belvoir in Surry Hills last year. I had going into that project, I had a very strong sense very quickly that we were working on a really important new Australian work, and to see it sell out in its first week and go on to win just the accolades and awards that it's picked up deservingly so has been really beautiful. So to get a Best Male Performance on top of all of that, not just being a part of the show and working with Lea for the first time, as you know, her sort of kind of like I felt very much like an understudy because you know she's such you know an amazing artist and has been in the game for quite some time, not mentioning any age there, Lea. but no, she's a beautiful person to work with, a beautiful project to be involved with, and yeah, I'm just like, you know, stoked.
Now the show itself won a Helpman as well, didn't it?
Yeah. Look, I mean, it picked up four of the six nominations.
Yeah, how incredible is that?
Four of the six nominations that evening. Yeah, including I think Best Play, Best New Australian Work, Best Male Performance from yours truly, and Best Direction for Letitia Caceres, our beautiful director, who is by far and large the most empathetic director I've ever worked with, and I make a point of always mentioning that because she was incredibly sensitive with that material and with her vision for it, in collaborating with Lea and everyone else on stage. So we built that show from the ground up for the floor at Belvoir last year, and really looking forward to seeing it go on and continue its journey and find audiences around the country and possibly overseas. I think it's the kind of work that deserves to be seen. And I'm very proud to have been a part of it. So yeah, I go back at the end of this month. Actually, we've got a week and a half run up at the Seymour Centre, so that'll be that'll be the first remount since it went on to receive, you know, the 14 plus awards that it received, the New South Wales Literary Award and everything. So it's you know, it's those sort of projects that you kind of like, you're sort of in shock, really. Being involved in that sort of stuff, I just feel like super blessed. Mm. And you never see that stuff coming. It's just sort of comes out of nowhere. And it was literally like, I get the call and, hey, next week we want you up in Sydney to work on this, read the script, we want you up here. And it's just, okay, how do we make this happen?
Can you give us the quickest rundown of what The Drover's Wife was about?
The Drover's Wife is, I don't know if you're familiar with the Henry Lawson short story, but it's basically about a woman and her children, and her husband's gone away droving for the season. Mm-hmm. And the story is sort of loosely about, you know, her taking on the responsibilities, you know, not just the domestic duties, but taking care of the kids and being out in this, you know, in the rugged Australian landscape. You know, it's very sort of Aussie battler. And what Leah Purcell does is she takes that story, and through the lens of Indigenous history, she just sort of starts clicking the compass further and further away from the original into sort of a very dark and confronting place for modern Australian audiences. So I think she did it really well. It plays out like a sort of Tarantino-esque Western at first. Yeah, everyone's right. Like, oh, this looks like a little bit of fun, and then just slowly people become a little bit more uncomfortable. And you know, we had people leaving the theatre in between standing ovations, so we knew it was something was working.
Yeah.
How was that for you? You quickly mentioned, I guess, the sensitivity side, but in terms of being an emotional journey, how was that for you personally?
For me, it was terrifying. I felt really scared. It's funny, like, as soon as you ask that question, it sort of brings up a lot of every night before I went on stage, because I had to play Yadaka, this young Aboriginal man who's on the run, who's falsely accused of committing a murder in nearby region of New South Wales, and he's on the run, and I had to represent this young Aboriginal man who has got this world descending on him because of his blackness. And every night before I came on stage, the stage has this wooden stump in it with an actual axe sitting in it. And each evening I had to come out through the darkness and take that axe out of the wooden stump and walk backwards over my footsteps and lay down before the lights came up to begin that story. And then Leah pulls the curtain out and the story, boom, starts. And I'm laying there as this wounded Aboriginal man hiding this axe underneath. And every night before I went out in that darkness, I just kept asking anybody listening, any of the elders or my ancestors, to stand beside me every night and guide me through that story every single night, because I just felt like I couldn't do it on my own. And whether it was a story I needed to tell myself or what, I had to do that because it felt like a lot to take on, you know.
How much of your sovereignty or your culture comes into the art you do, and is your connection to culture the reason you become an artist and an actor, or is it sort of the other way around?
No, I think you could certainly come to that conclusion. At least for myself, I mean, I've always, more and more as I actually reflect on my process and the way that I am in the world, I start to look at myself as a storyteller, and if I do that, I need to pay credit to the people who were the first people to tell me stories and share with me the gift of storytelling, and that would be my grandmother and my family back in Broome and out on the station and on the Fitzroy River, the Muttawarra. So a lot of my first stories were about your relationship with land and your relationship with spirit. And those stories, when you're that young, they sort of, they don't go in one ear and out the other. They go in, you hear them, and then they're a part of you. But the world is this sort of crazy, huge, you know, place full of all this different neon lights and sounds and Facebook posts and stuff. And so you go out there finding all these other stories and getting lost on that adventure. And as I've been becoming more conscious of the art of storytelling and the craft of storytelling for myself as an artist, I've realized that those early stories, for some reason, give me a strength that I have to respect and I have to recognize. So I don't have to you know, I don't have to concentrate deeply on that for every single role, but there are certain roles that come across where through my Indigenous experience, growing up on country, and with family, I'm given that gift of really knowing what it is I'm sharing and what's been hidden for a long time in this country, and what's been suppressed and denied, and all of those stories that have been sort of just underneath the surface of this country that need to come back through. And that's why the last sort of 10 years has been really beautiful to see, you know, Indigenous television, Indigenous filmmaking, Indigenous art, music, everything is just, it's a renaissance. And I'm so proud to see all the artists that we've got working, you know, the older crew, but also the young bloods coming through. I'm like so stoked to see like some of the young actors and musicians that are coming through at this time. It's really it's inspiring.
On that note, I guess here at Urban Dreaming we're combining, you know, tradition and this modern lifestyle we're living in today, and with what you were saying, I guess my question is, it's like, how do you balance the two? How do you, you know, you've shown your narrative and your I guess your way of storytelling now through acting and through performing, but how else do you balance the two and maintain your tradition but flourish in this modern, you know, society we're in, like, for example, Melbourne and the you know, like, how do you
yeah, no, it's a full-time gig, and it is a lot more sort of complicated than you could think. But I think in the end, like, that thing of just trying to be true to yourself and always stopping every now and then and taking a moment to reflect and go, what does this actually feel like? We have a word in Yingina called Lian, and Lian means listening to yourself within yourself, and, you know, the closest English translation would be intuition. And like the old people say, that's a very powerful thing. And in the West, it gets sort of, you know, overlooked. The idea of cultivating your intuition, and it's not that there aren't things that you can't gain from Western culture or Indigenous culture, or there aren't things that can change now. It's just about as you move forward on your own journey, you always sort of take that moment to reflect and go, okay, through my practice, what does this feel like to me? Does this feel truthful? And if not, how do I question that? How do I inspect it, go into it, explore the themes and ideas and the stories behind whatever this is, so that it feels right? Yeah.
We do. We hear all the time. Sarami talks about his Lian all the time.
Represent.
Yeah. And I mean, as artists or Indigenous people, we absolutely have to sort of listen to the energy that's around and really trust that Lian. How often do you get back up home to country? Because we talk about country a lot on Urban Dreaming and our connection to country and how it is our energy and part of our life source. How often do you get home, and does it give you the recharge you need, or do you find that Naam, Melbourne, gives you that now?
I absolutely feel at home here in Melbourne. It's such a beautiful city in many ways, very progressive, historically speaking and presently. I'm still trying to get accustomed to the climate, but it's possum skin country, so I just keep that hoodie on hand. But I try to get back home. I try to get back up to Broome and to the Kimberleys at least once a year. So if I can sort of find a way to, you know, have that coincide with sort of, you know, like a youth project or, you know, a couple of weeks work at a community or something, I'll do it that way, and it's a bit more cost effective. But even then, sometimes I'll just front up and just get a ticket. It's actually cheaper to fly out of this country than it is to get back to Broome.
Yeah, isn't it crazy?
But you make it happen, because, you know, all my family's back there, so... You know, if I go too long without seeing them, then they give me a hard time.
Yeah, I bet. And what's your favourite thing to do on country?
Because I do audio production, sound recording, I do a lot of field recording out there. So I've got a whole bunch of high-end mics and sort of field recorder kits. So one of my favourite things to do is actually to drive out into the bush, into sort of really remote areas, and just sit there at dawn and set up sort of a bunch of mics and record the country waking up.
Beautiful. And talking about that, you're on Urban Dreaming on Joy 94.9. We've been talking to Mark Cole-Smith about all things country and acting for him. You aren't just an actor, though. You're a muso and a producer, and we're lucky enough to have one of your songs. We were talking about Leanne before. So can you give us a little bit of an intro to your song as we...
Is this Leanne?
Yes.
Oh, great. Cool. Well, this is a track that I made with Ursula Jovic, a beautiful singer, writer, actor in her own right. And I sort of pieced it together with small field recording samples that I'd done out bush, and just sort of the idea was to try and create like a very sort of atmospheric, moody sort of love song, I guess. Yeah.
So. Perfect. Well, let's hear that. That was Mark Cole-Smith. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you so much for having me. Thank you.
Halo for Lover. This is Natano from Chasing Smoke, and you're listening to Urban Dreaming on Joy.
We have a massive second half of the show coming, Gal.
Is it a rumour that we're going to be having a yarn to Miscellaneous Hot Box?
No, it isn't.
Oh.
It's not a rumour. We absolutely are going to be talking to Miscellaneous, as we do each and every week.
Beautiful. And we also have some secret people in the room.
Oh, well, we'll talk to them in just a second, but let's get a bit of theming happening.
Who is it?
Yeah.
Coming from Darwin.
Ooh la la. Let's find out what's hot and what's not. Click clack front and back. You're in for a bumpy ride.
You are in for a bumpy ride. Miscellaneous, how the heck are you?
Oh, good evening. I'm well, thanks. I've been run off my stilettos, but I'm well. How are you all?
Oh, we're freezing. Freezing our little tookuses off here in Melbourne.
Yeah, well, I'm, like, sweating, so...
Yes, well, it is your hot box, and I think you've got your legs out for the boys.
Exactly. You know, I love it, and I love being up here in Darwin this time of the year. It is starting to get a little bit moist, though, which is not a problem.
No.
Doesn't sound like it.
No, but we started to chat about last week the Queen's Miss First Nation,
yes,
which is happening. It's going to start on the 25th of September.
Yes.
But more importantly, the Darwin Pride Festival is starting on the 21st of September.
Right.
And this is, you know, our Pride Festival up here. And, you know, it's run by volunteers, and it's a really great event to put it on. It's a two-week festival. They've done an incredible job. And as a part of that two-week festival, we do have Queen's Miss First Nations, which, as I spoke about last week, is a beauty pageant for drag, for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander drag queens and sister girls.
Ah, and who's in it?
Who well, have we got the coming? Finalists, we've got Crystal Love from the Northern Territory, who is a renowned sister girl. We've got Jojo from Sydney. We've got Nova Gina from New South Wales as well. We've got Josie Baker. We've got Isla from Darwin. We've got Shaniqua. and we've got Sasha Fearless from Queensland.
Yeah, God, you've got them from every nation
every
across.
Corner
yeah,
of the box.
That's right. So it's a national competition, the first of its kind, and we're so excited that, you know, we can have it up here in Darwin. And it all kicks off, as I said, on the 25th of September, but the Pride Festival begins on the 23rd.
Right. Having Nova Gina up there is going to be massive. How are you going to fit her and her glittery eyeballs into the same space as all those other queens?
Well, look, you know, and that's a part of the competition is, you know, who can fit the most stuff and bring the most costumes to the most impact. And, you know, with drag, it's all about being fabulous and being really sassy and being really fierce. So, you know, she's coming up. We've got, you know, as I said, we've got Sasha Fearless and also Josie Baker coming from Interstate, which we're so excited about.
Yeah, I bet. And talking about sassy and fierce, when are you coming back to our fair city, please?
Fringe, are you? Are you doing a performance
with Fringe? Yeah, got to mention as well. So on the 20th of September, which is Wednesday, I'm running a party called All Sorts, which is a celebration of diversity. It's a celebration of Indigenous talent. You know, we've got drag, we've got circus performers, you know, we've got singers. And I'll actually talk about that a bit more in detail next week. But it's a free event at the Arts House as a part of the Melbourne Fringe on Wednesday the 20th. So we want as many as community from, you know, the queer community, but also from the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander community as well to be there and help us celebrate that.
Yeah, beautiful. Well, Missy, thanks for chatting with us. I know that your balls are about to drop.
Well, I have dropped. We're in the middle. You can probably hear Constantine's big voice in the background. That's her playing with my balls. While
yeah,
I'm
right.
Playing.
Oh, well, multitasking. That's, you know, that's you're every that's woman. Right. That's what you do. You multitask.
That's right. Well, love. And we'll chat to you next week.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks for the update.
Okay, over and out.
Bye.
Gal, the Deadly Festival.
Yeah, so Deadly Fringe is a part of Fringe, hence the name. But it's a new segment to Fringe this year. I know they have done previous things, but the title and the program that's going on is completely 2017 bound. So what they've actually done, they've hired two emerging Indigenous producers, myself being one of those.
Oh, excuse me.
Where's the round of applause?
Oh. Yay!
Woo!
There we go.
Thank you. And another, who's the male representative, is Levi, which is great because we worked alongside of each other for a year and boy, and he's an amazing, amazing man who I'm so excited to share the festival with and to share the festival with everybody in Melbourne who does want to get down. So I think next week I'll release a series of events that are going to be happening for Indigenous and non-Indigenous people, for children, for adults, etc. But yeah, just something to get excited for next week.
That's exciting.
Deadly Fringe.
Yeah, Deadly Fringe. Yeah. Talking about things that are exciting and not things, but beautiful women sitting in this,
witty ladies.
In this studio. We have two incredible guests to share the rest of this show with us. Hello, ladies.
Hello.
Hello, team. How are you?
Good, thank you. Gal, who have we got?
We have Claire and we have Ebony. Ebony, yes.
Ebony, yes.
And Claire, you are the playwriter.
I'm a co-writer of the play, Escandra and the Weimar, and Ebony plays our amazing Irene Adler.
So yes. Could you give us a quick introduction to the play?
Jennifer Piper and I started writing the play about 3 years ago because I am a historian of the fall of democracy and the rise of fascism, and we thought that might be a little bit current. We did not really anticipate how current it would become, especially with Nazis actually marching in the US about 4 days before our opening night. So we've had quite a journey in trying to talk about the politics of the world at the moment. Well, parts of the world at the moment. And there is also several other themes in the play which we do not talk about as much. So we talk about the rise of fascism, we talk about the play being a adaptation of Escandra and Bohemia, which is a Arthur Conan Doyle short story, and we've turned it into a Escandra and the Weimar. It's an all-female cast. Almost every character on stage is queer. And we also have Ebony.
Yeah, it's so wonderful because the voice of Claire Bear that you just heard there, she's a massive ally of joy and also of urban dreaming and the First Nations people. And she co-wrote this piece with an incredible Indigenous voice, and it needed an incredible Indigenous, proud Indigenous woman to be able to pull that character off. And I'm looking at Ebony and she is just incredible. I've seen the show and, you know, it just warmed me like no one's business to know that it was such incredible, strong voice. How's the show been for you? How's your Indigenous voice?
It's been amazing. It's like, I was quite nervous to play the role because it's such a big character, and actually stepping into that and going and like building that character of Irene has been difficult, but it's been really rewarding, and I've found a lot out, like, about myself as well, and a lot about William Cooper.
Oh,
yeah, so
right.
Which was, it's really great. The song that I sing, am I giving away too much?
No, not to this audience.
just references a lot of, like, William Cooper's stuff and his petition, actually.
Would you like to have a little sing?
That I'm going to step in as a playwright and say, I'm afraid you have to come to see Ebony perform this song.
Absolutely, you should see the show, guys. It's last weekend is this weekend, but
yes.
Can you tell us, Ebony, a little bit about your journey as an Indigenous woman, not as Irene Adler, but as you?
Mm-hmm.
How have you found coming into yourself as an Indigenous woman and living off country as well? Where are you from? How do you connect to country? All of that kind of stuff. Give us a little insight.
I was born in South Australia, but I'm Noongar, so I'm from Western Australia. So whenever anyone asks me who I am, because, you know, you say, who are you, meaning where are you from, like who's your mob?
Yep.
I say I'm Western Australian, which, you know, say I'm Noongar. And I kind of grew up between Western Australia and South Australia.
Yes.
And as soon as I finished school, I went home to country and I started acting. And through my acting, I kind of learned a lot about myself through my culture because I studied the Aboriginal Theatre course over at Whopper. Great course. Go and study it. I just learned so much about myself and I met so many great people, and that's how I ended up here, basically. through a lot of people that I know. Like, yeah.
Yeah, right. Because, I mean, Melbourne has a really warm and loving Indigenous arts community. It's so great to be part of it. But in terms of going back to country, do you get back to country often? And what is it about country that kind of energises you?
Not as often as I'd like to. I lived there throughout for like 3 years as soon as I finished high school, and I went back then. It was just like, I think it's just this feeling of you feel so grounded, and you just, it's like this automatic feeling of you know you're at home. You're home and you've got your family there. You can just go visit them. They're just around the corner. That's the best part about it. And yeah.
Yeah. And the, within the show, your character talks strongly about connection to country and wanting to go home. Can you talk a little bit more about that without giving anything away?
Oh, there's definitely a connection for me to that, to those words. And there's so much strength in that writing, that brilliant writing.
Yeah, because
Claire,
of course you're over you're overseas you. in the cabaret. Yeah. You're overseas and you talk about wanting to come back.
Back to country. Yeah, exactly.
And Claire, for you, what was the importance for you to, I guess, incorporate an Indigenous voice in your play?
It's important to me because I am a historian that believes that there's way too many stories that are not told in the dominant narratives of the way that I was taught history, which is the great white man history of settler culture, especially in Australia. And I, especially talking about fascism, the first thing that I researched was the fight against fascism in the place that the story is going to be set, which is Footscray. And as soon as you put that into Google, you find William Cooper. Mm-hmm. And it seemed a no-brainer to me that the oldest culture in the world on whose land I live, and I've been born, I was born on Noongar country and I was brought up on Noongar country, that one of their great leaders should be able to know genocide on site when he saw the news from Germany about Kristallnacht in 1938. It seemed quite obvious to me that that needed to be in the play as well, because the play is in Bluestone Church, which is 200 metres from Footscray Town Hall, where William Cooper marched from to the German embassy to tell the German nation that they were not to start a genocide of their Jewish people.
Yeah. Would you say the performance is in respect for him or for in spirit of him?
Oh, I hope so.
Yeah.
I hope so, because it is not my story to tell.
Yeah.
It is, as a white historian, I believe that I can tell everybody's story because that's how I was taught. And this has been a journey for me to start out with no Indigenous co-writer 3 years ago when I started this story, because the story was about fascism. So I understood that William Cooper stood in the same relationship to fascism as all the other people that I knew. But then to be able to move quite far along in my understanding then of how you tell Indigenous stories on Indigenous land when you're not Indigenous, this is my journey.
And that's an absolutely incredible story on its own, because you worked quite closely with the Indigenous community to make sure that voice was right. And we want to hear more about that. You're on Urban Dreaming on Joy 94.9. We're with Ebony and Claire from WIT Incorporated.
Yeah. I never hesitate to burn a bridge. Sometimes I just remind them what the furnace is. And with the burners lit, it feels like the perfect gift. I can see the future, figure out what your purpose is. You're like a burden on a certain tip. And the icebergs lurk, and I pull the curtain on a virgin ship. You ducked out while the work was thick. So now I point out to these clowns where the circus is. I am what you pretend to be, that might offend you, but I've been through my end you with no one to avenge you. Friends come and friends go, that fucks with your mental, until that's just benzos and endos in your friend zone. So don't ever call me lucky. You don't know what I done, what it was, who I lost or what it cost me. For next meeting's kinda frosty, it's cause you were taking too much time trying to watch me.
And you're too busy watching me.
never hesitate to burn a bridge. I lift the pint glass and watch the right start when the curtains lift. On the right path to end up in that wrong place. With the Reaper in deeper than Dante's.
Yes.
Aching in my chest is what I'm living with.
Stress.
Youth incarceration's my privilege.
Death.
On the card since I was a youngling. Paul Kelly with the big belly did them dumb things. I hit 20, they said he might be lucky. Yes, the funerals are beautiful and life is ugly. Brothers and my sisters, love them and I miss them. Stuck within the system, can I get a witness? I get the feeling that me breathing is a bonus. But if I'm taking anything, I'm doing what they've shown us. So when you call them and you wonder where the cops be, it's cause they're taking too much time trying to watch me.
And you're too busy watching me. When you need to watch yourself, choose your words more carefully, or play the hand you're dealt. 'Cause you come around with your own mouth, don't be stupid, I say. 'Cause you come around with your own mouth, don't be stupid, I say. You
my brother, you gotta watch your health. Yourself, my sister, you gotta watch out for me. I'll watch for you while you're watching police. My niece, my cousin, my nephew. Understand that your fam will forget you. You gotta get up, breathe, get up, breathe, get up, breathe, get up, get up.
And you're too busy watching me when you need to watch yourself.
Get up.
Choose your words more carefully or play the hand you're dealt.
Get up, breathe.
'Cause you come around.
Yes, you're on Urban Dreaming with Joy 94.9. It's Gal and I in here and Grace pushing the buttons, and we're here with two incredible artistic women here. We've got Claire Bowen and Ebony Maguire, who are here from Wit Incorporated. The song you just heard is... what is it? Oh, I See You. Thelma Plum and AB Original, also incredible artists of their own right. Gal, we've been chatting a lot to the ladies in the break, but you were just about to go to a really incredible question.
Yeah, I think my last question in terms of, I guess just to wrap it all up, we've been talking a lot about, as we do at Urban Dreaming, about tradition and modern lifestyle. And I guess my question is, how do you two beautiful ladies flourish in an urban lifestyle? What are your strategies to do what you do while still being grounded, while still flourishing? What's your, I guess, your inspiration, your motive, your fire?
I think actively choosing who I have around me is a huge like strategy for me. I like the people that are around me a lot, and I like working with them, and they lift you up. And obviously always having like family on like on the phone all the time, just being like, hi mom, I need you, mom. Mum's always a good strategy, you know.
Yeah.
Calling mum.
Everyone's coping strategy.
Yeah, she's a good coping strategy.
But
yeah.
It is. Indigenous culture, community is such a massive part of that. That sense of belonging.
Family orientation. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Networking.
And that sense of that. And talking about family orientation and networking, I do just want to go back to, Claire, the writing that you did. This play was 3 years in the works.
Yes.
And
wow.
you and I have talked in... very extensively about the writing process. And I just love how, you know, again, I'll harp on about how strong this Indigenous voice is within the play, but your process in terms of making sure that that Indigenous voice was exactly that, an Indigenous voice. How did you go about that, just quickly, to make sure that we had that?
I listened, and I worked very hard to get in the room. I got in the room with a large amount of Indigenous artists because of Sir Rummy, and he invited me in and he guided me through all of the things that I needed to know to be in the room. But mostly I had to listen, and that is a continual state from now until I am no longer on this physical plane.
And how incredible is that? How easy is it to just listen? My mum always says you've got two ears and one mouth. Listen twice as hard as you speak.
Yeah.
And, you know, we've been kicking it for a really long time, like 80,000 years. Just listen,
just
hey?
Sit and listen,
I love that you said that, Claire. Yeah,
beautiful advice.
Yeah. And, you know, again, I'm trying not to give anything away, but, guys, if you can go and see the show, I would suggest
going and doing it.
You're going.
Saturday.
Okay, fantastic.
So looking forward to seeing
you. It's set in 1932 Cabaret. It's got an all-female cast. It's queer skewed. It's got this great Indigenous voice. It's got everything you could possibly want in one show. Ebony, are you a singer normally?
I'm trying to change that. I'm going to say yes, I am now.
Yes?
I wasn't before, but I am now.
Great, again. My mum's got so many pearls of wisdom. Apart from two ears, one mouth, listen twice as hard as you speak. She says to me, you're an actor. Act like you can. Insert whatever it is I'm trying to do here.
Yes. Fake it until you make it.
Exactly right. And look, fine. You have a beautiful voice, and so therefore you should absolutely continue that. And I think, you know, storytelling, acting, singing, music, paint, all of those things are how we connect to our culture and to our country.
Yeah, and especially that oral aspect, you know, singing and... just singing in general, that's such an ancient tradition as well. And to carry that in a modern sense, it's really important. And especially, you know, as your singing career is new, as you've just said, incorporating language, Noongar language one day and building from that, it's so exciting to see where you're going. And I can imagine Claire sort of...
She's just giggling and laughing.
I'm listening.
I just want to touch on that, Noongar language. So you were... Ebony, you were part of the crew that sort of changed the Shakespeare sonnets into language.
Yeah,
I was.
I didn't so help cool. translate the Shakespeare sonnets into language, but I was a part of I was a part of the process in taking it into schools. I was on that group that workshopped it and took it into schools, and we took it in, and just kind of getting kids speaking their language as well.
Yeah, how incredible, because that's what it's about. I mean, this year's NAIDOC was all about Our Language Matters, and to take something language, such as Shakespeare's language, and to be able to translate that into our First Nations language, or one of them, is so incredible.
Must have been quite difficult.
I was sitting there next to Auntie, and she was like, I could not get my mouth around the words. It's quite difficult. But once I got it, once you get it, it's like, you never forget it. Mm. You never forget it,
well,
and it's great.
I'm actually doing a presentation at the end of this week on Friday about the sustainability incorporated in language and the importance of language, and I'm just dissecting my own Noongar language and talking about what lays beneath the surface.
It's a bridge. It's really a bridge to, like, it's such a beautiful way to connect.
Did you, in the performance, and I'm sorry to give anything away, but did you explore that period themed language?
We have several languages in the play.
All right. That's all you need to say.
And we have a very period specific language.
Yeah. And just another little sneaky question, is it a musical?
It's a cabaret, and everyone should go and see it. We'll pop up the details on our Facebook page for you. Thank you so much, ladies, for coming in.
Thank you.
Ebony Maguire
and
Claire Bowen from Wit Incorporated. We've got a song coming up, Titus, Sorry Song.
Stress.
Next is Triple Bypass, who always follow us so well here on Urban Dreaming. Have a deadly evening.
From joy.org.au. Urban Dreaming on Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.